Welcome to The Lowdown, KMXT's new daily show dedicated to giving you the up-to-date information we have available on the COVID-19 outbreak and how it's impacting life on Kodiak Island. The Lowdown will focus on the facts as provided to us by local and state officials. During the show, we give you access to local officials and experts on COVID-19 and community actions related to it. If you have questions for our guests, please email them to lowdown@kmxt.org or call KMXT at 486-3181. You can find a list of upcoming guests on our Facebook page or on our website, kmxt.org. Audio from each day's program will be posted on the website. To the sad, sad truth,
the dirty lowdown. Hey, good morning. Thank you for tuning into the mental health edition of The Lowdown. This is going to be the overall topic for the Thursday edition of The Lowdown. Some days we'll try and follow up on what we're going to be doing today. We're bringing in professionals who deal with mental health issues in our community. And in other weeks on Thursday, we'll probably open it up a bit and offer you some advice or recommendations on ways to try and stay sane, other ways too. If you have suggestions as to topics or guests, please call us up or shoot us an email. For today, we have three local professionals from Providence, the Kodiak Community Health Center, and Canna, who will be able to give you some insight into what they're currently doing in their jobs right now in response to the COVID situation. And thanks to them for making time in their schedules for making this happen. If you have questions, lowdown@kmxt.org or call 486-3181. On the phone today or on video conference, I have Heidi Barrett McNerney, LCSW, MAC, Masters in Addiction Counseling, licensed clinical social worker. She works at Kodiak Community Health Center as a behavioral health counselor, providing mental health and substance abuse disorder counseling to patients in a clinical setting. Patients are referred by their medical provider or they can self-refer. She's been a therapist for 13 years, has worked at Canna for 10 and at Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center for 2, and she's been at the Kodiak Community Health Center for 15 months. Longtime resident of Kodiak. Thanks. Thanks for coming in, Heidi.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Stephen Flora, the clinical manager of Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center, supervises all clinical staff at the Counseling Center, oversees the program services and delivery of those services, and oversees compliance with regulations to meet state, federal, and local government requirements and licensing board compliance. Morning, Stephen. Thank you for coming in again or attending.
Good morning. Thank you.
Yeah. And also we have Philip Giordanelli. He is currently the substance use program manager for Canna, worked directly under their behavioral health department. He's a certified chemical dependency clinical supervisor, national certified addictions counselor, and a DOT certified substance abuse professional, responsible for running Canna's substance abuse outpatient treatment programs, worked at Canna for 6 years, previously worked in the Coast Guard, and ran a substance abuse prevention program in Alaska for the Coast Guard. Well, that's introductions. Let's start with you, Heidi, since I introduced you first. Thanks for being here. Can you tell us a little bit about what's happening on the ground with you now?
So what's happening on the ground with me now and with my coworker, Monty Johnny, is we are currently working from home and we can provide counseling services either telephonically or through a video platform. And both of those platforms are secure and confidential. KCHC as a whole is trying to keep the number of patients coming into the clinic to a minimum. And so they have moved most of their personnel to the home. Some people are at our administration building and they are trying to limit the number of medical providers they have in the clinic. So on a daily basis, they are having between 2 and 3 providers in the clinic. And then they also have medical providers working from home, too. So we're trying to keep services going as best we can. If people need to get a hold of myself and or my coworker, the best way to do that is to call the clinic at 481-5000 and they will connect you.
So have you seen an increase in caseload?
I haven't seen an increase in caseload as yet, but I would say on a weekly basis, it is gradually increasing. And my thought is as time goes on, we will probably see more people seeking services. And I hope people do that because this is the time to reach out and connect just not with family and friends, but also with professionals who can help people who are really struggling with anxiety and or depression or other issues.
So what kind of changes have you seen already to the way you do business at the Community Health Center?
So I would have to say meeting with clients telephonically has been a whole new world. It's very different from sitting face-to-face with someone because you can't really pick up on the nuances of body language and that type of thing. So you have to really pay attention. I have found myself at the end of the day feeling probably more exhausted than I would normally. But other than that, I think it's a good format, and doing virtual visits, I think, is even better because there's more of a connection there. And I've only done a few of those. So I'm working to get more people kind of vested in doing that. Some people have some issues with technology. So
some people, yeah.
Well, and I say that because I also have issues with technology. And so getting set up, I've been working out of my home for about the last 2.5 weeks. And I would say the first week, a great deal of time was spent just trying to get the technology in place to provide services.
Right. Heidi, let's talk a little bit about what's happening in your world.
Go ahead.
No, that just doubled myself up there. It's Stephen. there's a technological thing. I'm looking at two 11s in Heidi's face. So number 11 automatically went, the green number 11 I got went to Heidi twice. Steven at Providence.
Well, I would say I'm going to echo a little bit of what Heidi said. I think the services are fairly much the same. It's the delivery of them is different, obviously. We are doing telephonic, and we are beginning to do video. And some of that depends on the limitation of the client also. There are some folks who don't have the capability to, you know, they only have a cell phone. They don't have a secure platform through a cell phone like Zoom or whatever. So we are having to do telephonic with them. So the delivery is a bit different. We still take phone calls at 481-2400. Kayla, our receptionist, answers that phone. She still makes our schedules for us. That is all as it always has been. People were asking about intake packets. We have the capability to email that to you. And if you have the capability to receive it in email, fill it out. You don't necessarily have to email it back. We can walk you through that when we do the intake. So we are taking new clients. And we have had a couple of people call, actually. Haven't seen a really large increase in clients yet, but a few people have called. So we are taking new clients at this time.
Okay. And Philip, how are things at Canna?
Well, hello, Mike. It's glad to be here. I'm glad to be here. So there's a few things in Canada that's going on. I know you've had Dr. Pletnikoff and Dr. Jones on talking about the medical side, but I work in the behavioral health department and the substance use disorder treatment program. So we are still seeing our clients remotely on phone or video, like what Heidi and Stephen had said. We haven't seen really a reduction in services. We're still maintaining our substance abuse groups. We're doing them telephonically. We're seeing our clients video telemedicine, which was kind of Canada's already kind of set up for that because we were doing remote services in the villages for years. So we're using the same platform. The only difference is that people have to download it on their phones now, and that makes it a little more difficult. It is a secure HIPAA system that we use, so that is still being provided. We're still doing MAT services, medically assisted treatment for people. It's a harm reduction measure for heroin use or opiate use. And the doctor visits have been telephonically or video, and then the patients are still coming to the clinic to get their medication and then to do drug testing and see the nurse for if they need anything like that. So since we're an integrated model, all our clients are still seeing doctors, counselors, clinicians, nurses in the same kind of manner that we had before, except it's in a different platform than
So
everything else on this.
everybody, all the services are all being provided over a video or a telephone conference. There's no in-person visits anymore.
For behavioral health and substance use, no. The medical, there's still doctors on site, there's still nurses, but most of those appointments are over the phone first. They do a screening, and then if that person needs to come in, the doctor will determine if they need to come in and see a nurse. But about 90% of the staff at Canna are working from home.
Right. And have you seen things other than changing to a different platform? Have you seen different numbers start to increase of people
So we
requesting
still are
service?
getting re yeah, so we still get referrals from medical. I mean, we get referrals every week still. We're getting a lot of, mostly my referrals are substance related, but there is a lot of co-occurring depression, anxiety. We still get court referrals. We still get adult probation referrals. We still get OCS, Office of Children's Services referrals. So the referral source is still out there. It's maybe not as heavy as it was before, but we're still doing new assessments and intakes daily. So yeah, I don't think it's decreased as much as I had expected.
Well, I from all three of you pretty much hinted at that we're only at the tip of this. I believe the word yet was used a couple of times, which leads me to think that you believe that the request for services at all three places is going to increase in the near future. Is that right?
I would say so. I think that as time goes on and the longer this goes on, we are going to see more people seeking services. The patients we see at KCHC, as I said, are usually referred through their provider and/or they can self-refer. So the patients that we see are usually patients who have issues with anxiety, depression, etc. We also, I forgot to mention, we also have a medically assisted treatment program at KCHC. And those patients are still being seen, very similar to what Canna's doing. They're being seen either telephonically and/or virtually. And we have still seen new patients coming in through that program.
Can you explain that a little bit? I don't, what does medically assisted program mean?
Medically assisted treatment is a treatment program for people who have an opiate or heroin addiction. And it uses the medication, usually Suboxone, although there are a couple other medications that can be used. And it helps a person get off of heroin and/or opiates and uses the medication as a way for them to recover.
Right. And
help them. So, and I think as we go through this, and maybe even as we come out the other side, once we've kind of ended all the social isolation and the quarantine, I'm thinking we may start to see more people, just because there's going to kind of be an aftermath, I think, of everything that's going on right now.
Stephen, are you thinking that this is the beginning of a bigger influx of patients as well?
A little bit. I think just from the standpoint that humans are social creatures and we're all isolated somewhat, I think that creates anxiety. I think Heidi was correct in using the word anxiety. I think we're going to see an uptick in anxiety probably because people are not able to socialize. And so I think we'll see a little bit of increase in that way too. Yeah, and we've had a few more phone calls. It's not like a lot of people, but a few people have called that weren't already our client. So, yeah, we've seen a little bit.
Philip?
Well, one thing Canada did is because of this outbreak, we added a behavioral health consultant call-in line. So we do anticipate people are going to have more of a reaction to this as long as it continues to proceed. So we are looking at that, expecting us to get more calls for people that have concerns. And that call line is open for anybody in the community. And you can just call the CANA 486-9800 number and they'll connect you with a behavioral health consultant. So to answer your question, I do think that we'll see more people calling in for mental health and substance use issues.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about each of your organizations and your capacity then for dealing with increased service requests. Some of the numbers I've seen have been fairly astronomical as to how large of a percentage of the population that this is going to affect in regard to mental health issues, for anywhere from 50 to 60%. And I think that's actually pretty light. Personally, I don't know anybody that hasn't been seriously affected by this now. Is there some point where we classify it as being, you know, these people need more services than others to be able to maintain? But are you set up for being able to deal with having to provide a lot more service?
I think at Providence Counseling Center, we are now at 5 clinicians, which is the most we've had in the last year. And some of those folks are part-time and could be called upon to come in extra. So I think we're pretty well prepared. There are quite a few staff who are able to answer the phone. There are folks in the building, even though we do not have client traffic. But there are folks there in the building who can back up the receptionist. And so I think we're pretty well poised to take a bit of an influx of cases. So,
Heidi?
I think we're pretty well set up. Although we only have 2 counselors at the clinic, we do have case managers and other people who could be called upon to at least do what we call triage, you know, so talking with people on the phone, figuring out exactly what they needed, and then directing them to the correct person. Of course, there's no way to really know that until it happens, but I think we're pretty well set up right now.
Philip?
Yeah, I think Canada has a pretty robust behavioral health team. We have at least 5 to 6 clinicians, psychologists. We just got a psychiatrist on staff that comes in every couple weeks. We have counselors, case managers, behavioral health consultants. We have crisis management people. So I think if we were already using that pretty regularly before this epidemic, but I think we're staffed enough at this point where we could handle an influx of more crisis management or stabilization services.
Thank you. Now, operate in you guys' world very often. Is there cooperation between the three organizations in regard to mental health? I mean, do you have anything in common? Is there common meetings where you collectively decide on, you know, how service is going to be provided to the community, or do you operate in your own little circle?
I think.
Well, I would.
Oh, go ahead. I think that KCHC has a good collaborative relationship with both Providence and CANA. We often refer our patients to them because the whole concept of providing services in a medical clinic is that it's very immediate and it's very in the moment, and it's usually a shorter time frame that we would be meeting with the patient. But if we have patients who we feel need more services or maybe specialty services, then we refer to both organizations. And so I think we have a really good collaborative relationship set up. However, we have been involved in meetings, various meetings throughout the community together, but we haven't really been involved as like a behavioral health team or a mental health team getting together and talking about how we're providing services. Certainly that's something we can look towards in the future. I think that would be a great idea.
Stephen, you were going to say something?
We are identified by the state, I guess, as the public mental health agency. And so we have a grant, and that grant requires us to have memorandums of understanding or agreement with CANA and other agencies. So if we see each other's clients, we consult the other doctor or the other clinician. In case someone happens to come to our office that was normally a CANA client, then we consult back with those doctors. So it is somewhat coordinated already. That's not even a COVID response. That's what was in place before. So we do that pretty well, I think, with, and I know most of the docs at CANA and who supervises those patients. And so we do that pretty well already, I would say, in coordination of care between the agencies.
Okay. Philip, did you want to add anything?
No, I'll just concur with what Heidi and Stephen said. We're on multiple boards together, our behavioral health director, myself, other the Children Advocacy Center. We have lots of collaborative meetings. This is a small island. We all know each other. We've worked in other agencies with them, with other people from other agencies. So we're very a close-knit community, and we do share services if we deem it necessary, both with the behavioral health, medical, and substance use teams.
Okay. Now, when you're doing assessments with somebody that you is a new patient, and you're doing this telephonically now or via some sort of a conference, are you able to assess how in need a person would be of immediate service versus, you know, is there a rating scale for this person ought to be seen like right now and we ought to do something more drastic than we would with somebody else?
That's a great question. And I'll just pop in, just tell you what I do when I do my substance use assessments is you're right. You do lose the ability to read people, body language, certain mannerisms. It's hard to really gauge where they're at, especially if they're just talking to you, you know, just to stay in compliance with legal, or if they're truly want to have some sort of recovery. It is challenging, but we are able to get, at least in my department, enough information to make a diagnosis and a recommendation for treatment. But that is a very good question, because it is something important to see that person in alive and to build that rapport face to face and not over a computer screen or over a telephone. So it is challenging and it is tough for us, but luckily, at least with my staff, we can get enough information to make it determine a proper diagnosis and recommendation for treatment.
Heidi, you touched on it a little bit when you were talking about the difficulty of doing an assessment via phone or via teleconference. Is that how do you make that determination of degree of care somebody should get from the intake?
Yeah. So the way we provide services is just slightly different from what Stephen and Phil do. And so when we talk to a patient, we jump right in. We are already dealing with whatever is happening with them. And through the course of the conversation, we ask pertinent questions that would help us determine if that person would need to be referred on to specialty services through CANA or Providence. But the advantage that we have is that we are not required to do a full assessment. That's something that we kind of do as we move along through treatment. And so we can provide people with coping skills and ways to deal with whatever is going on with them, like right now. But I think, I was just thinking about some of the patients I've met with telephonically recently, and people right now are pretty upfront about what's going on and what they need. I think the patients that I've been working with have really just opened up and said, this is what's happening, and this is why, and this is what I need. So the patients are being very helpful in that sense. But then, of course, there are people who, who it takes a little bit more, and you have to finesse a little bit to get them to tell you what's really going on. I've worked in the field long enough to be able, I think, in most cases, to determine if a person needs more services than what I'm able to provide through KCHC.
Thank you. Stephen?
I do think Heidi's correct in that what I have found is people are more direct, especially with what's going on and what's happening. And I think they feel the need to be more direct because they realize they're not present in the room with us. They talk a little bit more about how they feel, what's going on in their house or in their life. They're a little more open. And I think a part of that is because they are also in their own environment and it relaxes them a little bit more. When you come to an office, I think that's a good part of actually telehealth, is you come to my office and it's a professional setting. When you're in your setting, you're more relaxed. You're more ready to say what you need to say. And I think that's happening. The client actually helps us through that themselves by being more honest and open, I think. And I think that's true. Yeah.
Great. Well, let's go into the big picture now. If we are all experiencing some degree of anxiety, our lives are changing a lot. I mean, what are the things that concern you most about what's happening right now from a mental health standpoint?
I think that one of the biggest things, which Stephen already touched on, is that people are feeling very isolated because they're not able to get out and socialize. I think one of the remedies for that is for people to stay connected to family and friends doing that through the telephone or doing that through, you know, FaceTime or Skype. People have come up with some creative ideas. I have a sister whose daughter lives in New York, and her husband get together with their daughter via FaceTime every day at around 5 o'clock, and they call it happy hour. And they have a couple drinks and they have some snacks and they visit. So there's some ways to kind of create that atmosphere of being around other people when you're not really around other people. And I think that is very critical. I also think that trying to not engage in social media and sort of limiting the amount of news that you're watching is also very helpful, because I think some of that just plays into the anxiety that people are already feeling because they're cut off.
Steve or Philip, you got a comment?
Well, I think what's also important here is movement. And you, Heidi, earlier you talked about taking a walk. I'm not sure if we were on the air yet, but talked about taking a walk. I think movement is important, and movement on a number of levels, because blood flow, circulation. When you walk, it's a distraction. There's 1,000 things to see in Kodiak, probably 1,000,000, actually. You see things you wouldn't normally see. And I always say to people, walk a street that you normally drive, because you will see a whole lot more. And I think that's that movement and that getting out and making your body move is very therapeutic on a number of levels, medically, mentally, just circulation wise, and seeing 1,000 new things.
Philip?
Yeah, it's, same advice. So we give a lot of clients some pointers about when they're hunkering down to make sure they limit social media, like Heidi was saying. Make sure that you, you know, you're social distancing, you're not social isolating. So it's important that you still keep in contact with your friends and your family, and you still get out and you still get a little exercise, that you don't just isolate in your house and hunker down. So it's important also, if you have kids at home, that you keep them on a routine, and you make sure that they go to bed on time and they eat regular meals, and you guys have some activities afterwards, and that you have some fun time. It's also important that you get proper sleep, and then you also should avoid excessive alcohol use or drug or tobacco use too, because some people will chain smoke or use other substances to try to help them cope with stress or anxiety. So we recommend against that. And meditation, relaxation techniques, all the stuff that we preach to our clients on a daily basis. So it's important that we practice ways to cope, so we don't, get over, suffer with these symptoms of anxiety and depression.
Okay, each of you work in, within a medical organization, and one of the largest concerns I would think that there is the added stress to the members of the medical community. So what are you doing internally in each of your organizations to provide services or advice to the medical people who are in the middle of this? Have you seen an increase in the demand for that? The doctors and the nurses and the other people that are on the ground?
So at KCHC, I haven't really seen an increase. I think people are pretty wrapped up in dealing with the medical issues, and so they're not reaching out as yet. I think that will probably happen. On a weekly basis, myself and Montu are sending out coping skills every Monday. So we send out various breathing techniques, meditation techniques, grounding to help people to cope with what's going on with them. And people have been very responsive to that. KCHC also turned one of its extra rooms into a sort of wellness room. I wasn't there to see that happen, but I know that it did happen. And so it's just kind of a safe place to go if somebody needs to take a break, where they can go and sit quietly. They've put some, you know, nice chairs and kind of dimmed the lighting and just did some things like that. So if somebody's really feeling overwhelmed or stressed out throughout the day, they can go to that room and take a 15-minute break and kind of decompress. So those are the things that are going on right now. But of course, we offer our services to our staff if they need them. So.
Okay. Stephen, I know that the Providence doctors talked a little bit about what they do to relieve each other. Is there anything you're doing directly, like what Heidi is doing to give them good behavioral tips?
We are on the same phone calls each day that sort of staff what's going on, and we do talk to each other about coping skills. For Providence, and it's because we're so large, a big corporation outside of Alaska, we have a call line, actually. It's staffed out of Anchorage where staff can call and talk to a person who is a clinician who will talk them through what they're feeling and what's going on. And I think here on the local level, the other thing that's happening is, I think the leadership team, at least in the counseling center, we offer each other a break. We say, let me do that for you, and you go do something else for a while. Or let me help you with that when we see a person. And I think it's about being aware of who looks or acts overwhelmed, because people get overwhelmed and don't always realize it. And so we are more in tune with each other and what's happening to each other. And I just called my own staff yesterday, and went down the list and call them and say, how you doing? What's going on today? Where are you at? And I think that's helpful, just to pay attention to each other. And that's what we're doing.
Stephen?
I mean, Phil.
You too? Okay.
Me too. I just have a quick thing, Mike. If you just give me a second, I want to tell you real quick what we're doing for our medical staff, because what Canna did was, we had the Wellness Center, which was a gym that we used to provide for our beneficiaries and veterans, and we closed it down at the beginning of this outbreak. And what we've doing now is, we're having medical staff, after their shifts, they can go in there and change, they can shower, they can get ready to go back home. If they have concerns going back home, we can provide a place for them to stay, so they don't have to go back if they're in a high risk environment where they could afraid of passing the COVID-19 virus to their loved ones. There's food delivery, so if someone can't get groceries, Canna has been able to send our van driver out to the store and deliver groceries if necessary to these medical providers. And then we also provide the behavioral health consultants that they can talk to on staff if needed. So we understand that this is also a mental health issue, emotional, but right now, I think with the medical providers, they just want to make sure that their family are safe and they're getting their needs met while they're working on this epidemic.
Okay, let's move into the broader community for a bit. Everybody's experiencing a degree of anxiety and stress. And my question is, you know, what are the best coping skills that people can utilize now to try and deal with what's happening? And at what point does it become, do you need to make the phone call? You know, if the community as a whole is trying to deal with this as best as they can, when do they need to reach out to ask for more help than somebody can give at home?
That's an interesting question. In my mind, I think if somebody is just starting to feel that they're not coping well or that they're feeling overwhelmed, they should call. They should reach out. Sometimes people just need someone to talk to who isn't a part of their family, but who's willing to listen to them. And oftentimes it's difficult for people to, for whatever reason, to talk to the ones they love the most about what's really going on with them. And so I would just say, if somebody feels like they need to talk to somebody other than their family or their loved ones, reach out, because that's what we're here for. We're here to be that ear, to listen, and to try and help people cope with what's going on. And so in my mind, no call is insignificant. But some of the things we've already talked about that people can do to cope with this, Stephen was talking about, you know, getting outside and how important that is, and getting some exercise, getting fresh air. I think Phil had talked about, you know, just making sure you're taking care of the basics, like staying hydrated, eating well, getting enough sleep, trying to stick to a routine. I had talked about, you know, staying off of social media and trying not to get too wrapped around the news. But also kind of lowering expectations of ourselves, you know, letting ourselves know it's okay if we're feeling wrung out and tired to take a nap, and just kind of accepting where we are right now, the way things are right now, and not feeling guilty or feeling like I'm not doing enough, I should be doing more. Kind of giving ourselves a break and trying not to future trip too much about like what's going to happen next or how are things going to be in a couple of months. Trying to stay present in the moment, you know, just dealing with today, and then tomorrow, deal with tomorrow. Those are some of the things I would say.
Okay. Stephen?
I agree. Sooner is better than later with a phone call. I think sometimes in healthcare we say, I'm feeling bad, and then we talk ourselves out of it. And I think that's the mistake. I would rather hear from you early when you feel a little decompensated than when it's too late. I think the phone call needs to come early in that process. So that we can, sometimes it's easy to talk through some things if it's early enough, or to get you to the right services early in the process and early when you start feeling those feelings. So I would say don't talk yourself out of it and say, nah, I don't need this. We often do that even with medical things, and I think it's time to call. If you feel you need to call, just call. That's what I would say. Before we run out of time, I do want to say, you talked about bigger community. We do have outreach. I'm just going to say this real quick, to several other locations. People have expressed concern. We have a case manager at the counseling center that is in touch with Brother Francis Shelter, with KWRCC, the Women's Resource Center, and also the Salvation Army. And she calls regularly to see if there's anybody we should have on our radar screen at the counseling center for services. So there were people concerned about folks in those service areas, and we do outreach to those agencies from our counseling center weekly. We talk to those folks.
So it's people looking out for others. It's people looking out for other people, that the people that aren't going to be prone to make the phone call, there's people looking for them. That's what we can do as a community. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, yes. And that's what we're literally doing with those agencies that house people. But we could all do that. Yes, in essence, I think we need to watch out for each other and watch who is overwhelmed. One thing I would like to say, too, is honor the other person's needs. In other words, everybody's going to cope a little differently. And don't try to talk them out of it. Allow them the space. What I say is, if it makes you feel better to do that, then do it. It's about you. It's not about me. It's about what makes you feel comfortable. So honor each other's space to cope in their own unique way. And I think that's very critical. That's very important.
Philip?
Yeah, I just have a couple things. You know, if anyone feels signs or symptoms of stress, you know, they can call the CANA 486-9870 line. We have a COVID line that will put you directly to a nurse, and the COVID-19 line that will also link you to a behavioral health consultant. And just if you're experiencing any signs of stress or anxiety, I know a lot of people that are at risk, or people that are older, people that have health issues, or people that have, you know, that have are susceptible to the COVID-19 virus. So I would say, if they any questions or any concerns, you can call those numbers. It's open to the public. You don't have to be a CANA beneficiary to contact us, and we're here to help.
Great. Let's you know, we don't have enough time to go through both of them, but you mentioned the at-risk population. I imagine that the request from services from that group is going to be pretty large. But there's also the issue of children and how we deal with mental health. How do you talk to kids about the virus and about keeping kids safe? And when do they need professional intervention?
Well, I do think it's an opportunity for parents to teach children, if they're at the right developmental stage, of course, that sometimes it's not all about us. Children are very egocentric. It is about them. But it's an opportunity to say, sometimes what we're doing is for the good of other people. And I think it's a great opportunity to teach that, to talk about why we're doing what we do, why we are socially distancing, why we're doing what we're doing to protect other people, not just ourselves. And I think that's a great lesson. So it depends on the age of the child, I think, as to how you present that and how you talk about it. But I do think that's an important opportunity here to teach children about the good of others and helping others in this process.
At what point should a parent, though, make the call? I mean, is it if you're a parent and you're wondering whether your child isn't coping well, what recommendation would you give people to reach out for assistance?
Again, I would say sooner rather than later, maybe. For some of those, I wouldn't wait till it's too decompensated. Go ahead, Phil.
Yeah, same thing. I would say any concerns, you can also just call and talk to a behavioral health consultant about the child. And it's better to weigh on the side of safety than just to wait until it gets worse.
Well, it sounds like you're all pretty well prepared, and you have a plan in place, and you have resources available to people in the community. And I think this was just the starting point of a discussion we could have of what kind of issues are available to people in the community and what kind of issues are going to crop up, or if that you're not already seeing. So this has been really valuable. I hope people find what you had to say sort of shows that we're on the ground and we're ready to help people. So I thank you very much for your time, and I think we will probably be able to do this again and have some questions from people directly about some things we didn't get a chance to talk about. So thanks for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike, for having us.
All right, you have a good day and stay
really
safe.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome.